Welcome to a new episode of the Tennis Lifestyle Podcast. I'm Gianluca Sola. In this episode, I chat to Enrico Maria Riva. I came across Enrico on Twitter. He is very, very active, has a huge amount of followers. Very interesting guy, very quite funny, but at the same time gives a lot of information with stats and on the ATP tour and so on, and the WTA in tennis in general. It's a really nice chat. Enrico is a ATP tennis graphic and stats operator. Basically, every time you see some graphics on a tennis on TV, on tennis tournament match, and any stats, that's him behind the scenes. He also works with the commentators and obviously feeds them information and stats that they can use during the TV commentary. So it's quite an interesting job he has. He gets to travel all over the world, go to all the tournaments, and obviously meet everybody involved in tennis. We talk also about the US Open that's just finished about a week ago. We go through the US Open, his opinions, and some talking points. And that's it. I hope you enjoyed the episode. Ciao, ciao. Hi Enrico, how are you doing?
Hi Gianluca, I'm pretty good, thank you. You?
I'm doing very well, thank you. Thanks for coming on the podcast. I just wanted to, in this podcast, obviously speak to you, find out more about you, and also later go through a few talking points of the US Open and have your opinion since that ended not too long ago, just over a week ago, if that's okay with you.
Sure, yeah, pretty happy.
Okay. First of all, I'll just do a brief introduction. I came across you on Twitter. It's the only social media I kind of use and look up for news and stuff. And I obviously look at a lot of tennis information, and you come up often. And I was always interested in your opinion, because you've got a very nice, I like your sense of humor, and also your stats and your analysis are always very interesting. So that's how I came across you. And I also noticed you've got more than 13,000 followers, which is quite incredible. And not just anybody. I see you got everybody who is important in tennis, from Novak to Piatti to Wawrinka, you just name it. How did that happen?
Well, I started on Twitter long ago. I think it was like 2008 or 9. And I was obviously a newbie at the beginning. But there was a breakthrough moment in my Twitter experience when Flavia Pennetta released her book. Because back in the days, it was at the beginning of Twitter, so not many people were around. And the Pennetta book was quite interesting, but it was in Italian. And I had it because I was interested. So I thought it was funny to, you know, translate some bits and post it on. And I remember I was playing tennis that day, and I posted a few excerpts from the book, and I went to play tennis, so I switched off my mobile, and when I opened it, I had like tons of notification of new people following me, and most of them were journalists or people involved in tennis, and I think that was what made me become a little bit known for tennis. And then I guess working in the tour helps, because you know you meet people every week. So
okay, fantastic. I just want to go into your intro. I mean, we'll talk about you a bit later,
because your intro is also quite funny, and I want you to explain it to us, but I'll read it. It says, tennis TV graphics and stats, unforced errors producer, fruit expert, enemy of capital letters, Nick Offerman follower, silly man. So let's start with, so people can understand who you are better. Let's start with tennis TV graphics and stats. Can you explain that to us?
I'm a freelance TV graphic operator. I work for a British Italian company named Delta 3. They are in charge of the ATP TV graphics, and they run the operation from the Master 1000 tournaments on site. And so we travel there. We work in the director cabin booth, and we just sit next behind the director, and we put all the graphics on screen when needed. And at the same time, we have a connection with the intercom, with the tennis TV commentators, and we chat with them during the match. We feed them what we think are the most relevant stats of the match, or information of something that happened in the past between two players, or
something that can be interesting that they can talk about as well.
Yeah,
I guess
either talking points or quick snap information that they can easily say on TV without, you know, having the time to look for that information themselves. So
okay,
what we do that, live, right?
Okay. So basically, every time we are watching tennis on TV, and some statistics comes up or graphics, it's you who's putting them there. Am I right?
It's someone from Delta 3. It can be me. Each one of us is assigned to a particular court when we are on site. And so it can be me. Most likely, if you watch in center court, it will be Stefan Trudel. He's the senior TV graphic operator. He has been working in the business for like 19 or 20 years now. So he's usually on center court. I usually cover what we call B court. So every two of each Master 1000. And then in some event, we go until court number four, and depends on if it's a combined event or just men.
Okay, but we'll talk about your job a bit later, because I think it's quite fascinating. Let's go back to your intro. Then it says unforced errors producer.
That was a joke to make fun of myself, because when I tweet, I sometimes make mistakes. So I can be sloppy in what I write, and you know, on Twitter, people notice it straight away and they tell you. And so I've been in peace with myself now with the fact that I make mistakes. And at the same time, next to us, we have a logger that is in charge of logging each point of each match that we cover for the thousands, and obviously he's in charge of deciding between force and unforced error, and we train them, we give them the guidelines, so we're sort of in charge of that process.
Okay. Fruit expert.
Well, that's a thing that I have with some friends of mine, Vanni included. I saw you. You have a podcast with him, Vanni Giacchini.
Yes.
And
that's right.
So whenever I go abroad, one of my passion is to get like an hour or so for myself and go to the weirdest possible fruit shop that I can find, and search for a fruit that I've never seen before, and you know, taste it, review it. But that's just for friends.
For fun. Okay. An enemy of capital letters.
Yeah, I don't like the capital letters that I write. If I can, it's with the small letters. I think it's because, you know, capital letters are the way you shout on social media. And I find it weird that every name starts with a capital letter. It's like you shout the first letter and then everything else is dog voice. So I don't like it. But I mean, it's, you know, no, and I think that graphics, obviously, I can't enforce this vision on TV.
I think I'm with you on that one. Nick Offerman follower. I had to look him up because I wasn't sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, I became a huge fan of Nick Offerman in Parks and Recreation. I think it's the character that he plays is fantastic, and I like his lifestyle. I like the fact that he's a celebrity, he's a very well known actor, and at the same time he's a carpenter. He has his own factory. He handmade. Okay. Furnitures, chairs, whatever you can think about with wood. So I like the way he found a niche spot in the establishment of celebrities.
Okay. I must admit, I never heard of him, but I know about the series. So maybe I'll have a look at the series. Do you suggest
boss,
it? Very good.
Grumpy boss that the main character Amy Poehler has to deal with all the time.
Okay. And lastly, but I think this is maybe self-explanatory, Silly Man. Well, are you silly?
I usually don't have many haters on Twitter. I think my presence on social media is like a sort of natural, neutral one. So I don't cause many controversies, but at the same time, you know, because I try to use my sense of humor, sometimes people don't get it, and I see that, because sometimes I say things that I are hard to explain, but they take it seriously. So it was a way to say to people, don't always, I mean if I talk numbers, I try to be as honest and serious as I can, but if I give you an opinion on things, most likely I'm joking or I'm trying to see the funny side of it.
And I think because your statistics and numbers can be quite, not boring, but quite like a heavy subject, I think if you counter it with, like you do, with a bit more light entertainment, I think it's very good. But I have to ask you one last thing, because I only recently got your number and your WhatsApp, and your WhatsApp says probably with Delbonis. You must explain this.
That's another joke that I have with my friends. There are two tennis players that I find difficult to work with, and those are Delbonis and Kukushkin. And Delbonis is the problem that I have with Delbonis is the length of his matches, which are usually really, really long. And you know, in tennis, people that work in tennis, most likely they don't have any overtime. So if the day, and we have a daily rate, so if the day goes 5 hours or 15 hours, we get the same pay. So the more it goes on, the more we stay there for the same amount of money. So sometimes it happens that you have a Delbonis match like at 11 p.m. and it's after 12 hours of working in tennis, and people like, no, really, come on. And Kukushkin is the attitude. He's always whining and moaning. And I don't know. It's a kind of player that I don't enjoy working with. Okay. But
and do you think Delbonis also because it takes so long because his ball toss is
that's a part of it. That makes
it's part of it,
But also for cameraman and director, you can imagine a cameraman being on court for like 12 hours and all of a sudden he has a guy that tosses the ball to eye and he has to all his parameters.
I read a funny joke a few weeks ago, I don't know from who, but it said wherever Delbonis is playing, they have to advise the air traffic control people.
Yes. Okay. There are some players that are tricky to follow for cameramen and directors. Delbonis is one of them. Bublik is another one because he can, do the underarm serve, and if you are on the wrong camera, you will miss it. Kyrgios, Monfi, those quick guys are quite tricky, and it depends when you have their match. If it's the last match of the day, it's even trickier because you are tired and you have to double focus on.
Okay. All right. Let's just get back to you. Just quickly, tell us like where you were born, where you grew up, and how did you get into tennis and TV graphics and statistics and so on?
I was born in Milan, in Italy, 46 years ago. And I studied in Italy. I actually studied something completely different. I have a degree in history, and I pursued that path for a little bit, but I find it not so interesting eventually, because unless you become a famous historian, you just focus on local history, and eventually I found it boring. And so I went to work for a picture researcher company. It was called Corbis. It was a Bill Gates company, in Milan first and then in London. And while in London, I had some free time, and I got in contact with UB Tennis, actually, with Ubaldo Scanagatta. It was, I think, 2006 or 2007, and I offered my time as a volunteer to translate articles from English to Italian, and okay. I started from there. And then because I was in London, I had the privilege to attend a couple of Wimbledons with them. And so I started writing for them, for a couple of other websites, for some magazine I wrote for Matchpoint for a long time. And but then I realized that I didn't have any chance to make it a proper work to be a tennis journalist. Okay. Because in Italy, it was a proper job until Tommasi and Clerici. After them,
yes.
Side job. So you write about all the sports that you can, and you include tennis in it. And even okay. with that, you're not granted to have a salary. And at the same time, I can speak English, but I'm not mother tongue, and I can't compete with the mother tongue journalist. And, you know, having so many countries with English speaking journalists, Canada, Australia, UK, US, and it's really, really impossible to enter that market as a journalist in English. So, okay. I and at the time I had my first kid, so I basically gave it like a bet. I said, listen, if I find something else in tennis, I'll stay. Otherwise, I'll give it a goodbye. And okay. because I was on Twitter, Stefan Trudel, the guy that I mentioned before, we were following each other on Twitter. He posted me a private message saying, would you be interested in logging some matches in Miami? It was 2013. And because the guy that was supposed to do it, he bailed out the last minute. And so I said, yeah, well, yeah, of course, I'll give it a try. But logging the logging position doesn't cover flights and accommodation. So I had to find one of the two for free to make it worth doing it. Okay. And I managed to do it. And so I started with them in Miami. I did Rome the same year with them. And back in the days, they were doing graphics both for the ATP and the WTA. So in Rome 2015, they offered me to start doing some graphics to check if I was interested there, any good in it. Okay. And I did a couple of matches in Rome. And it was okay, I guess, because then they offered me Shanghai that year. And that was my first tournament, and then I started from there. Then the company I started with lost the contract, but I managed to, you know, to stay with the new company, and that's it.
Okay, well, fantastic. So basically, one thing led to another. But in how did you get? Were you always passionate about tennis, or not really? Only when you started working?
Tennis that's why I think it worked eventually, because I came into it knowing a lot of tennis, not knowing a lot about tennis, a lot, and being passionate about tennis. As you can imagine, in every job that you can think of, there's some people that are passionate, some people they do it just because it's a job, no? And it's the same in tennis, I assure you that. So some of the people that are working in TV or other tennis-related jobs, they do it because it's a job. Now, they are really, really good in it, but maybe they don't like tennis that much. And and to me, for me, that was a plus because, you know, being passionate, I would like spend my 3 hours to look at some stuff or infos or translate some articles because I enjoy that. And that's information that I have and that I can use in my job.
But I mean, how did you get passionate or into tennis? Did you play it as a child or?
I started, I think I was like 12 or 13. I was never really, not even decent in it. I used to play with a couple of friends. We used to go twice a week, but just for fun. I mean, I cherish the fact that I had the possibility to play in the Australian Open outside courts in 2011. That is my career peak as a tennis player.
And
there's a funny story related to it because I was playing with a friend of mine there, and two drunk ladies. They were under the assumption that I was Djokovic, and they came to watch us. They grabbed the fences and they start shouting at me like Novak, Novak, and I couldn't convince them that I wasn't Djokovic. And you can imagine Djokovic and me playing tennis is not even two different sports.
but they must have been very, very drunk.
They were really drunk. It was a funny moment.
That's interesting, fun. Okay, Enrico, before we talk a bit about the US Open that just passed, I just have a few more questions about your job. I mean, actually, I've got quite a lot, but I'll just do a few. I'm curious, do you, let's say statistics that come up, and there can be a million statistics on tennis, are there some that you find really interesting or that are very important to look at for a player or a spectator? And do you believe, the second question is, do you believe that players can use statistics? There, in the last years, there is many people and players that use experts like O'Shaughnessy is the first one that comes to mind to help them improve their game.
Well, I start with the second question. Yes, definitely. Okay. Statistics are really, really important for tennis players. The major tennis players, they have their own statisticians and their own experts, and they know exactly how to prepare a match also according to numbers. They know that their opponent might be in struggling with the rallies that go over like 9 shots, so they know that the strategy of that match has to be patient and you know, to make him play, and you'll get mistakes and you'll get eventually the match. The statistics you see on TV and the job that those guys do is different. So on TV, we have a fairly limited amount of available numbers, and we have to play with those. And I think what's relevant in those statistics is to find pattern that explain how the match is going. I mean, there's nothing really relevant per se. Even unforced and winners can be irrelevant if the match goes in a different way. I think you have to be able to read the match and use those numbers accordingly. Sometimes there are even matches that numbers are superfluous, that are irrelevant, because the match is another story. For tennis players, tennis champions preparation, there are mostly the Okai and the Infosys and the IBM numbers, and those are really, really important. They can tell you the rotation of the ball, the speed of the shot, the direction, the how do they play every second point of each game. I mean, you can go really into details, and obviously it's really a niche, because most of the players, they can't afford to pay for those numbers, but those who can, yeah, they benefit from it the big time.
They benefit a lot.
And I think it's going towards a system in the future where they will have those numbers available for many players.
Okay, it's going to become more accessible. Okay,
I think so. I maybe not for free, but it will be available.
And all these numbers and statistics, when a match happens, is it just automatically captured by a computer?
No.
How does that work?
Yeah, eventually, because that's probably the plan for the future. But as of now, there's a physical person next to the graphic operator. And we have a software that has all the variables. So you basically, you assign the point first to the player that wins it. And then you describe the very last shot of each rally. So imagine there's a Djokovic Nadal match.
Back and down the line.
Concludes the point with the forehand winner. Then you give the point to Djokovic, and then it will be first forehand drive. And then you will rate the winner with stars. And because the system is both to give statistics and then at the same time to have a login TXT for the editing. So whenever ATP comes up with the request to the ATP, we would like a package of the best Djokovic forehands, for instance, in the tournament. The edit department, they have a login sheet, and they can easily go to the second where they can find that particular shot and build up a reel of
Djokovic. Okay, interesting. And TV graphics, are those are kind of always the same, though, am I right? Or do you have to kind of change them up to... How does that work? With every tournament it's different, or... Or how does those graphics work?
Design of the graphics is an ATP is based upon the ATP request. So the company builds it according to the client needs. And as of now, we have for the ATP three different graphics. We have the 250s, the 500s, and the 1000s. So the 250. Okay. Sometimes it's not ATP media that runs it. So, sorry, the local TV, they are in charge of producing that particular tournament. So they get the graphic files, and then they build their own graphic system, but they have to use the graphic files from the ATP, from Delta 3. 500s and 1000 and 1000 are pretty much all the same. They only change the color. 500 is blue and gray, and 1000 is
gold.
Black and gold, yes. Gold, we don't have the liberty to change or create new graphics during a tournament or during a match. That's all preset. What usually the ATP does, every renewal of a contract, they discuss new packages and new options, but and also there's two kind of major graphics that you see during a whole day of tennis. So the in-match graphics, they come from us on site, and then there's the big graphics, the big screen, like, you know, the rankings or last time or like last 10 tournaments played with all the lists and everything, that comes from the war feed. And the war feed, they have operator, they use the same system, same company, but it's a different graphic machine.
Okay, very interesting. Last question, is there a commentator you get on or prefer or like the most?
Well, luckily,
or that you work with the most.
There's the thing that we noticed with Steph and I when we started talking to them and feed them information and everything. Each commentator has his own style. So there are commentators that are more inclined to use Hawkeye stats and Hawkeye data. There are some that are more interested in historical facts or curiosity or odd things. So we try to organize our research according to the commentator we have. But actually, we are really pretty happy about all the people we work with. They are really nice people. They are knowledgeable. They prepare themselves really hard for what they do, and they are quite fun to talk to.
Okay. And anybody famous, like an ex-player or something that you've worked with?
We work with Robbie Koenig, with Mark Pecci, with Colin Fleming. We had Jamie Delgado in Monte Carlo once. We have Miles McLagan. And then the famous one, you know, Lee Goodall, Nick Lester. Pereira. I don't want to forget some of them, but there are so many. And there we have Naomi Cavaday. We have Naomi Brody. Jill Muller, he worked with that.
Okay.
For, I mean, so yeah, there are many.
Okay. I liked Jill Muller. He was very good. I liked him. And, you know, obviously Robbie Koenig is a South African
yes.
player. Robbie Koenig, yeah.
Working yeah. with Amazon Prime. So he left Tennis TV a few years ago. But,
yes.
Yeah. Every now and then we...
Okay. Okay, thanks, Enrico. Can we talk about? I've made some talking points of the U.S. Open. I know you were there. You said for the qualifiers, and then obviously yeah. you worked. Let's start with this for you. What was the highlight of the tournament?
Wow,
I know there were many, but if you have to pick one,
it would be an easier question to say what wasn't an highlight of the moment.
Yeah.
I read someone writing that Murray shouting "I'm still fucking here" is not even in the top 10 of the best thing that happened in the tournament. Now, I think, I mean, you have to Novak winning the Grand Slam would have been obviously the most amazing task of the year and of the past 50 years in tennis, but it didn't happen. And I guess I'll have to go with Raducanu coming from the quarter slam without losing a set. I mean, that's pretty remarkable. I don't think
we will have
something like that.
Yeah.
And actually, I'm sort of proud myself because in New York, I directed for the first time the US Open qualification tournament, some matches. And my first ever match as a director was the Raducanu first round in the qualies. So,
oh, wow. Okay. Did you see anything there or you had no clue like everybody?
The qualification matches are always tight matches. So there's always a sort of a balance between the two players. That was a straight affair. So it was like, I think, 6-1, 6-2 with Shoofs.
Okay.
But I couldn't read much into it. I mean, it was the first match.
Yeah.
I mean, no, I wouldn't have dared to project her as a champion eventually.
As a champion, yeah. And I mean, one thing that comes to my mind is that we are so used to the big three. But in this US Open, there was no Roger Federer, no Rafa. And yet, probably this was one of the best slams in quite a long time, in my opinion. What do you think?
Well, I'll give you probably an opinion that will receive mixed feelings. I think, obviously, Nadal, Federer and Djokovic, they will be remembered as the the time tennis changed from being a sport, a follow sport, to become an event, like a sport that is really worldwide known and followed. But at the same time, they sort of ruined the party for everyone else, because what they did record-wise and career-wise is so unthinkable and so unrepeatable that I can see the ATP, the WTA, and the journalists struggling with the idea that something else interesting can come up. And that's, I think, why Raducanu, the Raducanu exploit was so well received by anyone, because it was a sort of enlightening moment for everyone involved in the business that there's hope for the future. And obviously, for us being in close contact with all the tennis players and matches, we know that tennis is not going to die after Nadal, Djokovic, and Federer. But maybe the regular fans at home, they feel like that's the end of the world. And but it's not. I mean, tennis has been fun before them. It will be fun after them. And they were fun to watch because they were breaking records. But actually, the real fun of any sport is when you have some sort of equilibrium of balance, and you have matches that can go either way, and you are on your on the edge of your seat throughout all the match, no? And you don't know the outcome, and you follow it straight with curiosity. And so I think this year Open, there were so many great matches, so many fifth sets, so many fifth set tiebreaks. And even in the women's side, there were so many tight matches. And I think it will remember as one of the best slam in the past decades.
In a long time, I mean, on a personal level, I must say, I kind of agree with you, but I already was feeling like this for a few years. I have nothing against Federer, Nadal, or Djokovic, but I was just hoping that somebody younger or very young would just break through. You wanted something new, something fresh, some new faces, and it never happened. Yes, there was the odd Grand Slam winner, Wawrinka and Murray and so on. But I mean, it was basically those three that that won everything. So I'm quite happy that this came along. And the other thing I wanted to ask you, there's a lot of this talk now of next gen and next gen, or whatever you want to call it. But there's the sort of age group or generation where you can put Zverev, Medvedev, Tsitsipas in, that seem to be taking over. But right behind them, and I'm not too sure, but in my opinion, there could even be a stronger group with Sinner, Alcaraz, Korda, Rooney, Broxby, Musetti, and so on. What's your opinion? Do you think the young, I don't want to call them next gen, I don't know, but they seem to be coming up very quickly.
They are the current next gen. And I think first, ATP had a really good idea when they came up, with the next gen format. Because there was a need for those young players to have a spotlight, and they couldn't have that spotlight in major tournament because they would have been smashed by those big guys, and eventually it paid, because those first next gen players, they are all there now in the top 10. It's some of them even won slams like Medvedev, and. So they are the actual gen that we have now, because Djokovic and Federer, they are the old guys. They're still there, obviously. They are still leading. So, well, Djokovic is still leading and Nadal in some sense, but the actual gen is there. It's the Medvedev, Tsitsipas, Zverev, although obviously he will have to to face what his personal issues are, because it's not well received as of now from most of the public. And
I forgot also there was another one called Al Yassim, who made a semi. He's also
Bovalov, there's many of them. And next gen that we have now is really strong, but I think it was the same in every generation beside the 20 years that the big three dominated. I mean, there always have been new players coming on every 2-3 years. If you think that Jim Courier, that is obviously regarded as one of the best players in the last 50 years, and he has been number one in the world, and he won 4 slams, which were a lot of slams back in the days. He won those slams in 2 years, and that was it. He won 2 Australian Open and 2 Roland Garros back to back in 2 years, and then he never won anything else as a major. And that's probably what we have to get used to again in the future. People winning 2-3-4 slams in a span of 2-3 years, and that's it. But
also because I don't see, once Djokovic is retired, I don't really see anybody dominating. There seems to be a lot of very good players at the same level.
It's difficult to say, but as of now, there's no one that seems to be able to dominate as much as those three guys did, and especially on the play side. Something like we did with Nadal.
What did you think of Alcaraz? It was his tournament in a way.
Alcaraz is really impressive. He's a definitely promising guy. He will be top 10 soon. I like his style. He's really good, fun to watch. I think he will be good either on clay and on hard. I'm not sure as of now on grass, but we will see eventually. To be honest, it's difficult to make prediction because you never know how the body will react and the mind will react. Now the mind has become, always have been an issue with playing sports, but now with Osaka and Mardy Fish and all those talking about it openly, it has become a factor, no? So you never know those guys if they can focus and how long will be able to focus and how long will be able to, to bear the pressure.
Yes, that's true, because nobody knows who you are, like a Sinner or an Alcaraz. And you come along and it's like, wow, this is an amazing player. But now already everybody knows who Sinner is and they all expect him to win or to be a top 10. And so the pressure is really on now for him or these youngsters to prove themselves. And I think the next year or two will say a lot if they will become great, great players. How about the big three? Do you think there's a lot of talk about this? Maybe too much talk. Do you think Federer, Nadal, Djokovic have more slams in them?
No, I think Federer is done. I think Nadal has obviously some shots to at least a couple of other Roland Garros. It depends if his body will stay fit enough. And I'm pretty sure Djokovic will win two or three more.
Okay. So Djokovic, again, a controversial and long subject, but probably will be end up with the most slams and maybe as the greatest player.
Well, I don't really like the debate of the GOAT and everything because it's so.
It will never finish.
No, it will never finish, and it depends on so many aspects. But number-wise, it's difficult not to say that Djokovic is the best of all. because numbers are all his way at the moment. But it is, the thing is that it's not only numbers that count, because the way Federer changed the perspective of tennis 20 years ago, it has been phenomenal. The way Federer changed the image of tennis in the world.
Yeah.
It does. So there are many factors that are involved in this debate. And I mean, it's fun that everyone can have his own opinion, but I don't see a way of settling it. And probably tonight that we won't settle it.
Yeah. Finally, probably the most interesting thing of the US Open and the subject, what everyone talked about in the first week, toilet breaks and Tsitsipas.
I think I'm sort of started it in Toronto. I was doing a couple of matches that had really long toilet breaks, and I remember an Opelka one. I think it was Opelka against Harris. And
yes, I remember that. 13 minutes
to come back. 13 minutes. And I remember talking about that on Twitter with some people, that it was too long. I mean, I see the point of those who say there are sports that have like 15 minutes break, like soccer, like football, the basketball, they have a big break between the second and third period. American football, they have a big break the halftime. And that's fine, but it's regulated. So I think it would be okay to say at the end of each set, we take like 3 or 4 minutes and you can do whatever you want. But then television, they know what to do. Yeah. They will be prepared. They will have packages of highlights. They will have stats. As of now, for us as a television, it's difficult to cover because you don't know when they will come back. So you don't know what to do. You can't imagine to go, you know, like showing an interview with someone or because the player might come back like in 2 minutes or in 10 minutes. So you don't know how to feel it. And for the spectator at home, I mean, I'm always tempted to change channel. I'll go to another match. If there is a 10-minute break, I'll go to another match. And as a spectator in the stadium, I'll definitely leave. I'll definitely go for a toilet break. And who knows when I'm come back, if I come back, because maybe I'll go to another match. So I don't know if it's beneficial for the game to have these unregulated delays. I mean, Tsitsipas, he is a funny character because obviously he was in the right to do that. He didn't break any rule.
Yeah, there was no breaking of a rule, yeah. But I mean, as a tennis, talking specifically as players, I can understand, you know, you've got your momentum going and maybe the match is shifted to your side, etc. And tack, all of a sudden now you've got 12 minutes of interruption. So it's, it's difficult.
Many tricks that a player can use to upset the opponent. If you think about the 25-second rule, the 25-second rule only applies to the first serve. And when you toss the ball, it ends. So if you toss the ball and you catch the ball and say sorry, then you have all the time in the world to serve.
That's exactly.
Tricks you can use to get under the skin of your opponent. Toilet break is one of them. But that's part of the game. I mean, you can drop shot him to death. You can, moonball him. You can do.
And anyway, I did read just a few days ago that the ATP is going to change the rule anyway from next year regarding medical timeouts and the toilet break. So I don't know what they're going to do, but I think they have decided to change it anyway.
I think they must do it, and I think if they think it properly, they will see an opportunity for TVs and commercials. Because if television know that they have a 5-minute break and it's a granted break, obviously they will attract investors, and people in the stadium might watch something in the screens because those screens are controlled by our directors. So our directors may be able to put, you know, the highlights of the first set in the screens for the audience just to keep them entertained, or they will, the stadium can, you know, imagine a contest between the MC and the audience, you know, giving out t-shirts or, you know, some way of entertainment for them. As of now, it's impossible because you never know how long they need to be entertained.
Last,
there are some variables that have to be taken into account. The length, the distance of the toilet, the reason of the toilet break. Men and women have different needs. So they'll have to think it through.
Okay, Enrico, thank you. The last thing is, what is next for you? Are you going anywhere? Your next tournament? I know there's Indian Wells soon.
Yeah,
will you be at the ATP Finals in Turin?
Yes, my next events will be Indian Wells and then Paris, Milan, Turin, and I think Turin for the Davis Cup. And I'm actually really looking forward to Indian Wells because when the pandemic hit the world and obviously tennis as well, Indian Wells was the next event. And I was on a flight to Indian Wells. I landed in Toronto and I was about to change my last flight. And I got a message saying the tournament has been canceled. And all of a sudden I'm in Canada with no job, no way back. And, you know, a pandemic that is closing everything. Yeah. In the world. So, the fact that now we are going back to do Indian Wells is a sort of going back to real life again. And I'm really looking forward to it.
So you'll be traveling a lot in these last 2-3 months.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm very jealous. Indian Wells is one of the tournaments I would love to go and see. They say it's one of the best.
It is. It's probably the best 1,000 we have.
Oh, really? Okay. Is it just because it's really well organized?
Well, not even to go into that. The organization is amazing, but the atmosphere is the friendliest one you can imagine. Indian Wells is a very wealthy place. And people that live there are mostly retired, well-being people. And they all volunteer for the tournament. So it can happen that you get a lift from the venue to go back to the hotel with a car that is the size of a delivery truck. And you have your own driver that is like probably a former bank director of a major company. And it will take you to a supermarket, wait maybe 10 minutes for you to do your shopping and take you to the hotel. That's the kind of spoil that they put on people. And I mean, we're not a player. We don't get spoiled usually. But Indian Wells is another level. And obviously the weather helps.
It will be interesting this year because it will be... It will be, I don't know the weather there. Will it be a lot hotter than usual?
Well, the current weather now is 40 degrees. So as of now, it's really hot. I'm not expecting to change that much within 2 weeks. It's probably going to be like 33, 44, 35 degrees.
But it will be a bit like an Australian Open.
Yes. Yeah. There's a lot of difference between day and night in the US. So you might go from 35 degrees noon to 18 degree for the night session.
Okay, very big difference. Anyway, good luck. I always finish my podcast, Enrico, with I have a mega rapid fire quiz. Very briefly, there's a whole lot of questions. So what is your very first memory of tennis?
Agassi.
Define what type of player you are.
I would like to be an Edberg. I'm sort of a cold driver.
Okay. What's your best shot?
It was the forehand.
It was.
Now I don't think I have a shot.
Okay. Did you have a tennis idol growing up?
I think Agassi was my first role model in tennis. I really admired career as a player and human being when he was playing.
Okay. Your current favorite male or female player?
I like Bublik a lot. I love Kyrgios when he plays tennis, which is really, really rare to see. But I like tennis. I love Monfils. I love Kerber. I really enjoy women tennis when I have a chance. I enjoy the women final a lot.
Okay. All right. List the big three from your favorite to your least favorite.
I don't know. It changed. Yeah, that's actually, I can't give you a straight answer because it changed a lot. Okay. Back in the days, I would have said Federer, Nadal, Djokovic. Now, I probably would say Nadal, Djokovic, Federer.
Okay.
There are many reasons behind this, but I think they all had their moment to be my favorite.
Okay, that's a good answer. This will be interesting. What is the best match you have ever seen?
Working wise, I think I will have to go with Monfils Nishikori. I think it was Montreal 2019.
Okay, I don't remember that.
That was an amazing. I think I was standing up for the last 10 minutes, like seriously. Because usually when you work, we are mildly involved because we have to keep the focus on what we do. We are working. But in that match, it was all over the place. We were like shouting as like crazy.
Okay.
And I think Robbie Gonin won that match. I remember him commentating.
Okay. What's the best tournament in the world?
Indian Wells.
Okay. Is there what's the most amazing tennis experience you have ever had? It can be anything.
That's something that I actually miss nowadays. I really love to attend the press conferences. Press conferences are amazing for the atmosphere, for the possibility of not only obviously listen to the players' answers because you can read the transcript, but to look at them, to look at their hands, to look the way they look at the journalists, to look at the their tics, their nervous movements. You can tell a lot by watching them doing a press conference live.
Okay, interesting. If you have to book a restaurant and invite three players, it can be male, female, of any era, which restaurants do you go to and which players do you invite?
I'll go to a teppanyaki restaurant. And I'll have Petkovic with me, that's for sure. I'll have Courier. And I think I'll have Steffi Graf.
Okay, explain to me which restaurant did you pick?
Teppanyaki is the Japanese, I think it's Japanese. Basically, you sit in it.
Where is it?
Style of restaurant. I mean, basically, you have like a round table or a horse. How do you call it in English?
It's horseshoe.
Yeah, horseshoe shape table, and the middle of the table is the cook.
Yes, I know what it is. But where is this restaurant? Where is it?
The best experience I had is in Shanghai.
Oh, okay. It couldn't be anywhere but the best one. And tell me, why? Okay, I understand Courier. You said you really enjoyed him. But why Petkovic?
Petkovic, I think, she's really interesting outside tennis. I mean, she's knowledgeable. She's acculturate. She's funny. She's witty. She's I really admire her personality, and I would love to spend some hours talking to her and learn about her.
Okay, and Steffi Graf, just well, because Steffi she Graf, was amazing.
Spotlight. Yeah. So I'll be thrilled to have time to
okay.
And you know, to go through her memories. I mean, she's really she shaped women tennis the way it is now.
Well, what's your favorite food?
Fruit, definitely fruit.
Fruit. Okay. What's your favorite fruit?
I would say cherries.
Ah, me too. I love cherries. Do you? Are you superstitious? A lot of tennis players are.
No, I know, and you have no idea how cameramen and director are. I think one of the funniest, scariest thing that happened to me in this job was like I was a newbie, and I was doing a match that was, you know, going quick one direction, and I dared to say loudly, "Oh, but this will be over soon." And the abuse that I got from that sentence, I mean, it was impressive. Everyone is superstitious, Dennis.
Okay.
But I'm not religious. I'm not superstitious. I can't think about believing in stuff that requires a closed mind set.
Okay. How many hours do you sleep on average?
Now that I have twins, I would say six.
Okay. Your favorite country?
Ireland.
Favorite city?
Favorite city? That's tough. I really like Shanghai.
Shanghai. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is tennis the most difficult sport in the world?
No, I don't think so. No, I don't know how you can measure such a thing, but I think there are hard sports harder than that. I don't know how people can be a professional cyclist, for instance. I mean, that's brutal. Okay.
How will tennis look like in 2050, 30 years from now?
Well, that's interesting because I've read recently a guy that was doing a research on Grand Slam champion height since 2000, and only four of them are under 5'11", I think, and. I think it will change in that direction. So players will be more Berrettini type, Khachanov type, and less the Dudi Sela or the Rocus or the Simon. And so tennis player will be they will be well proportioned, but muscles, and at the same time, probably tennis will reduce his length as he's trying to do now. So yeah. I'm expecting the slams to cave eventually to the three set system.
I'm against that, but I have my opinions on the best of three. I think everything must be shortened a bit, but. I think the slams must stay the way they are. But anyway, that's my opinion. If I'll give you a shot, you must give me a name. Serve.
Sampras.
Return.
Agassi.
Forehand.
Federer.
Backhand.
Djokovic.
Volley.
Edberg.
Drop shot.
Murray.
Movement.
Movement. That's tough to say. You caught me off guard there.
Monfils, no?
Probably, yeah, Monfils. Djokovic, probably.
Mental toughness.
Djokovic, even though obviously he showed in the US final that he has his weakness as well. And I'm only listing men, not because I don't follow women tennis, but because I'm used to watch them all the time. So
yeah, okay.
It comes to mind.
Touch, feel touch of the ball.
Nadal.
Presence.
On court.
I'd say on court, yeah.
Roddick.
Oh, really? Okay. Have you ever seen Roddick play?
Yeah. I saw the 20, I would say, 9 final in Wimbledon with Federer, the one he lost 16-14.
Okay.
And I was really sad for him.
Okay. Yeah, no, he's a nice player. Okay, that's it. The last thing is, you'll probably know this type of question, but ask yourself a question and answer it.
Ask myself a question. So do I see myself working in tennis for a long time? And the answer, sadly, is probably not. Because there's a tendency to automize and centralize everything nowadays. And COVID pushed that process forward quickly. So I see every tennis TV or broadcasting job in the future being done remotely and from the same place. So it will be hard to keep on doing what we do.
Enrico, thank you very much. I think I've kept you maybe a bit too long, but it was very interesting. Okay, thanks, Enrico. Ciao, ciao.
Ciao.
Ciao, bye-bye.